AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting again in again for the Matt McNeil show. As you may know, Matt was injured in a car accident last Thursday evening driving home from doing this show. But he came home from the hospital last evening. And he's going to call in at 4 o'clock today, at the 4 o'clock hour, top of the 4 o'clock hour. He's going to give us an update on how things are going with him. So you'll hear it straight from his mouth. And right now I have a guest that I kind of became friends with 10 years ago when I was running for the State House of Representatives as a brand new candidate. And this guy was working on the DFL House Caucus. And now he is a Minnesota State House representative, Representative Michael Howard. How you doing, Michael?
Todd, it's good to hear from you. And it both sounds – that's a long time ago, and it feels like yesterday all at the same time.
I agree totally, yeah. Yeah. You haven't aged at all. I have, though.
I don't know if it's the legislature or the two kids at home, but the gray hairs are definitely showing up. So.
Oh, okay. I don't see it on your photo here. It's better than not having hair like me. So anyway, Michael Howard, you are on. You're the vice chair of the Housing and Finance and Policy, and you're also on a committee called Preventing Homelessness Division. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, well, housing has been an issue, a passion issue of mine, something I've focused on. I think everybody recognizes that, you know, nothing in life really goes well if you don't have access to a stable, safe place to sleep at night. Mm-hmm. And when you look at so many of the challenges we try to address the legislature, I tend to think that if we were able to make the kinds of changes that end homelessness, that create housing stability for families, for kids, we'd have a better shot at addressing, racial gaps in our schools or improving economic or health outcomes. All roads lead back to home. And so I've had the fortune of being the vice chair of our housing committee these last 2 years and serving on a homelessness committee to kind of look at the services side of things. And in the new legislature, I'm excited I'll be stepping up and chairing the housing committee. And so there's a lot of important work we have to do in this realm and in this new legislature, this new world we're waking up in after the election. We've got more opportunity to do just that.
Right. Okay. So you're going to be the chair, no longer the vice chair, but the actual chair of the Housing, Finance, and Policy. Is that right?
That's right. Finance, and Policy. That committee will take a look, really at the range of housing spectrum issues, from folks that are experiencing homelessness all the way to the need to create more homeowners, and especially for our BIPOC homeowners, where we have some of the largest racial gaps in terms of homeownership in the country. We have challenges at really every spectrum of our housing system, and one of the things that we haven't been doing is making the investments we need to promote the kind of development, create the units, and support folks across the spectrum. And so we definitely have our work cut out for us.
Yeah. What can the House do as far as – it seems like we see a lot of new housing being built, but most of it is not very affordable. Is that how you see it from your point of view as well?
Yeah. I mean, we need to really be in yes and mode. Any sort of units that we're creating in housing is a good thing, because we have such a supply-demand mismatch. And we're on our way to becoming, a region like San Francisco or Seattle or Denver, these areas where truly affordable housing does not exist unless we build more units. So it's a good thing, but I sort of say we need to be in yes and mode. And so while there is a market for creating that sort of luxury or market rate housing, yeah, especially at the multi-family, there isn't on its own a market to create units of housing that's truly affordable for folks that are making 50 or 60 or 30% of kind of what's called the area median income. And those are folks that are teachers, that are nurses, that are workers in our community that don't have access to affordable housing. And so the state has a role to play to help provide some funding that can help necessitate the kind of development we need to see, create more units. In some ways, there's just a classic supply-demand issue that the state needs to be more involved in to create more housing, and that's going to bring down costs of housing for everybody.
Right. I know that, you know, the city has a lot to do with zoning and things like that, and then you have people kind of worried about low-income housing being too close to their neighborhood. You know, that oftentimes is misinformed or misunderstood, you know, theology on their part. But it seems to me that it's awful hard to deal with because the people who are developing housing are usually private companies, and they want to, you know, make the most for their money. And so are there ways to incentivize private companies into building housing that is more affordable, that the state could help with and not step on the toes of, say, the city council?
Right. It's a really good question. I think there are ways that we can incentivize the development of housing that is more affordable. There is a market. There are for-profit companies that do that are in the business of developing affordable housing. And I sort of put quotation marks on affordable because, you know, that's a bit of the eye of the beholder of what is truly affordable.
Right.
But in terms of a range of levels, there is ways, tax credits that are available and incentives that lead to the development of some of those units. Where you run into a challenge on sort of the private development is units of sort of what you would call deeply affordable are lower income workers who have incomes, have jobs, but just don't have the incomes to sort of rent at market rate or even what some folks term affordable housing. We need to, there requires more public subsidy and often supportive services to go along with that housing for certain populations too. There really isn't a way to sort of pencil out those deals unless the state says, you know, we think there's a public good here that mm-hmm. we should be involved and help make sure that we're creating the kind of housing that everybody in our communities has access to.
Right. Yeah. I actually know some people who live in subsidized housing, and, you know, it's really, really difficult when at that kind of income level to move forward in life whatsoever. And I know we have people from a certain party that usually complain about subsidizing anything unless it's, you know, large corporations or something like that. They complain about the subsidizing, but they also complain about homeless people. The two are very close together. I mean, you know, some of these people are on the verge of being homeless. Their life is so delicate.
Right. I mean, so in Minnesota right now, more than 500,000 Minnesotans are paying more than 30% of their income on their housing. And for more than 250,000 Minnesotans, they're paying more than half their income in housing. Well, if you're paying more than half of your income in housing, you really are one bad break away from homelessness.
Yeah.
And truly, you know, people sort of question, like, well, what are the causes of homelessness? By far, the leading cause is people can't afford their homes. You know, the rent is just too damn high, as they say. And,
right.
And so, you know, we need to look for ways to sort of create more housing. And on the rental side, something that I've worked on is I think we need to look at state-based rental vouchers or rental assistance. You know, it's an area where the federal government hasn't stepped up.
Yeah.
Right now, one in four Minnesotans that actually qualify for a housing voucher get it, and people are on waiting lists for years. I think a good use of our state surplus would be to look at providing that rental assistance, which creates a win-win for renters, for landlords, for our community. When you look at the environment and the increase in evictions, providing direct supports to folks that are still kind of struggling to keep their head above water makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, and also it helps for mental illness problems and things like that. Homelessness often causes mental illness. I think some people think it's vice versa, and sometimes it is.
Right.
But you know, you sometimes people are led to mental strife because of finances, and it's even you know, for decades, one of the largest, the biggest reasons for divorce is because of financial reasons, and we need everybody to be living somewhere and be mentally healthy. I was going to mention, I don't know how much you've, I heard something, I can't remember where, on a story on, like I was in my car and I heard it on the radio. A guy was talking about this new thing, the tiny homes, and he was a developer, and he was talking about that how much less expensive it is to manufacture. You could manufacture tons of tiny homes for still less than a multi-unit apartment building, and they could, you could have sort of the same result, even nicer results actually than an apartment building, but people are having trouble wrapping their heads around it. Do you think that might be something that will be talked about in this realm of housing and low-income housing?
I think so. I think it's an innovation that some communities have looked at, and really we need to kind of have open our minds up and be able to think outside the box to address our housing crisis. Otherwise, we're never going to solve it.
Right.
I mean, one of the challenges with constructing any construction of new housing is it is very expensive, from the lumber to the labor to the land. It's just not an easy proposition to construct, especially new housing that's affordable. And so looking to innovative solutions like tiny homes is something that I think we ought to look at and support. There's other innovation to look at, things like modular homes, and can you construct homes at a better cost there? There's some Minnesota companies that are doing some really innovative work on that front.
Yeah,
we got to think outside the box.
Yeah, and I think now is the time. You know, I have a 19-year-old daughter, watching her and her friends, and just how different it seems like the world is going to very soon be, and is already turning into, with Gen Z voting now, and I think the new generation is going to be much more open. You know, you see this kind of housing in places like Japan for a long time now, and I just think that America is, with this new generation, is ready to wrap their heads around it. Say, could I ask you to stay through a break, and I'll keep you for just a little while longer after that?
I'd love to.
Okay, great. Let's take a short break, and we're going to come back and speak a little bit more with Representative Michael Howard. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back. Shut off this stereo. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. You're listening to the Matt McNeil Show. I'm not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson sitting in. We're going to hear from Matt at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, though. He's going to give us an update on how he's doing after his car accident last week. But right now I have on the line our guest, Representative Michael Howard. Hello again, Michael.
Hi there.
Hey, so you are down, you're in District 50A, parts of Edina and Bloomington and Richfield, or?
It's a, you're in the neighborhood. After redistricting, my district shifted a little bit. And so in the new year, I'll represent all of Richfield and a little slice of southeast Minneapolis.
Oh, okay. That's quite a shift, actually, isn't it? Or were you in 50A before?
Previously, I had part of Richfield and part of South or East Bloomington, so it kind of sucked me up to the north a little bit.
Okay,
and gave me all of Richfield and this little bit of Minneapolis. The Minneapolis members have greeted me to the Minneapolis delegation, and I've got a lot of kind of like, oh, you're a Minneapolis member now, so we'll see what that entails.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's got to feel a little different. And right now, I mean, I remember when I ran for office, and then I started to kind of hear, you know, if you win on Tuesday, then on Friday you have orientation, and then basically you're off to the races. I think people feel like if you win an election for something like the State House, you have a 2 months off before you really need to go to work. But what is it like down there right now? Did you have to move your office?
It's kind of funny, as you mentioned, or as I hopped on the phone here, I'm cleaning up my office and preparing to move basically down the hall. So there's some of those kind of nuts and bolts, get ready. But you're right. You sort of, during an election year, in a way, you sort of plan your life up to election day, and the rest of it's sort of this black hole afterwards.
Yeah.
And then you wake up, and at least on this election, after this election day, you sort of woke up and saw the landscape, and were immediately filled with hope and opportunity, and you start working on that to-do list, and it gets long pretty quick.
Yeah.
And so right away, you sort of got to get your mind out of the campaign mode and into legislating mode. And this year in particular, with our trifecta, it feels like the stakes have been raised, deservedly so. We've got a big opportunity and a big job ahead of us, but you sort of vacillate between excitement and realizing this is going to be a once-a-generation opportunity to do a lot of good things.
Yes, absolutely. We did it 10 years, or almost 10, yeah, 10, right. 10 years ago, and we turned a $6 billion Republican deficit into a $2.6 billion DFL surplus, for one thing. And also, paid family and medical leave has been a thing that I've been working on, because it would be very beneficial for a small business owner like me. And it looks like for the first time we're going to be able to do that, because even 10 years ago we didn't have the trifecta. We just took the House back, I think, if I'm remembering correctly.
Well, and thank you for your advocacy on that front over a number of years. It sort of, I bet it's felt like Groundhog Day the times we've been at the Capitol saying this is just common sense thing that we can do to, with a bunch of wins across the board in terms of making sure that family member workers, have the peace of mind and to be able to stay home, and if they need to, with their families. And it's good for businesses,
right,
to have healthy, happy, engaged workers as well. And so I do think that this is the year we finally break through that gridlock and pass
right. Paid
family medical leave. And I hope we do it right away.
Child care is another small business thing that I'm pretty passionate about too, even though I don't need to use it anymore. But I know small business owners like me, it's a lot harder to hire people because they can't afford childcare.
Right. People have left the workforce, and there's a lot of data that says one of the big reasons is they can't find access to affordable childcare. And that problem is even more acute in certain areas of the state, in greater Minnesota. Like housing, it's an area where it represents a huge share of family budgets. And like housing, it's an area where the current market really is broken. There isn't this market-based solution that's going to create affordable child care for families. And so there are a lot of, again, it's not rocket science in the sense that through some investments we can expand access to affordable child care. And the ripple benefits, just like paid family medical leave, would be immense.
Right, and especially now that we have this very unusually high surplus, a lot because of the pandemic, everything stopping for 2 years or 3 years, and now we're back and we have all this money that hasn't been spent. So, but I definitely am going to talk more about that even after I let you go, because there's a lot of ins and outs to that, and it's very interesting. And of course, on the side of the DFL, we talk about investing back into things. Wow, the same way small business owners need to think, by the way.
Right?
If I don't reinvest back into my business, I go out of business. And so that's going to be the argument, and I'm sure I'm going to be reprinting a paper version of my speech that I've been giving down at the Capitol for 9 years in committee hearings for paid family and medical leave, and probably I'll see you down there in a committee hearing.
That's
again.
Great. I wanted to have you talk
just kind of for fun a little bit more. I remember, I kind of got Kelly Morrison. I kind of talked her into running. She's still mad at me about that. And Lauren Bresnahan, I helped her get up and running. And they both, at the end of their first time, coming to Election Day, they're like, oh, I can't, after Election Day, we can get together and maybe, go out for a happy hour or something like that. And I was saying, I don't think so, because you're going to win. And then you're going to get even more busy than you were during election time. And so does it just feel crazy down there right now? And you're getting committee assignments. You just got promoted from vice chair to chair of the housing committee. You're also assistant majority leader. Is that correct?
Yes. In this last term, I have been. I won't be for the next term. We just elected some new assistant leaders.
Okay.
But it's a time of transition. We just had last weekend our caucus retreat where we started to begin as a caucus, you know, plan our priorities. And kind of as we've been talking about, the air of all this just takes on a new dimension when you realize we're not going to go to battle with a Senate Republican majority that's just going to stop all this stuff. We have
right.
the chance to go across the finish line on things that we think will truly make a difference and improve lives. And so that adds, an added layer, I guess, of, expectation around getting ready. I keep saying, there's good problems to have. We've got lots of good problems and lots of good work ahead of us.
Right.
And thank you for helping with our folks out in the West Metro. I sort of feel like you were on the front edge running in an area that you sort of warmed it up, and we're continuing to see that move in the right direction.
I got my teeth knocked out 10 years ago, and now we're winning there. So I feel really good about it. And my proudest part of getting involved in all this is getting Kelly Morrison elected, the first Democrat out in this area in the history of not only the state or the country, but the universe. A lot of volunteers keeping them together in a very red district, and we have turned it blue, and we're going to keep doing that in other places as well. I learned a lot from you. I remember you were like working in communications, I think, back when I was running for the DFL caucus.
I was a communications director for our House DFL caucus. There wasn't any grand plan to kind of switch sides and become a representative or run for office, but that's kind of how things turned out.
Yeah.
But I did, as a staff person, really fell in love with the legislature as a place where we can do good work. And the working with our candidates gave me a lot of joy, too, because it takes a whole team of folks working
yes.
and running all across the state to make this thing go.
Yes.
And I'm particularly grateful for folks that run in challenging areas. And step up, and as you've seen in your area, that can, in a long-term way, make a difference.
Yeah. Part of it was I was just too naive to realize what I was up against. I know most people look and see if they have a chance of winning. I didn't do that part. I just thought, no, I'm gonna run for this. And then I, got my butt handed to me. But it was all for a good cause. And it's still pretty much, the most incredible experience of my life, even though I lost twice. But working with all of you type of people, I've just met some, the best people that I would have normally not met, and I stay friends with a lot of them, Paul Thies and Aaron Murphy, all these kind of people. And it's really been a huge part of my life, even though I haven't actually gotten down there. It must feel like this time, now that you're in the majority, it must really be like watching The West Wing on TV, right? Everything's just happy. You all had your jammies on at your caucus retreat, and we're drinking
right.
hot chocolate and talking about only positive things. That's what it's like, right?
Right. People always joke about which political show is closer to the truth, and sometimes it's a little bit more like Veep than West
yeah.
Wing around here
right.
for those that watch those programs, but.
As long as it doesn't turn into House of Cards.
Exactly. That one's pretty far off base,
yeah.
I can report. But the part that does feel a little bit West Wing-y these days is that there is a lot of optimism about doing things we haven't done before and building a government that's truly responsive to the people, that's improving lives. And so it's going to be a lot of hard work and certainly not easy. In some ways, I feel like we're still in the rah-rah, we won this election mode.
Yep.
And haven't, really turned the corner on some of the tough decisions. And, we have tight majorities in both the House and the Senate. Nothing is going to come easily, even with DFL control and with a DFL governor.
Right.
But if we work hard, if we center the voices of Minnesotans, I do feel optimistic that this could be the most historic session, you know, we've had in my lifetime.
Yes, I agree. I'm looking very forward to it, and I expect to get my hands dirty and come down and testify as a small business owner again to talk to, you know, convince everybody that – convince Democrats that they can feel confident in voting for paid family and medical leave and child care, and convince the Republicans that I'm a small business owner who – really believes it would be very helpful for small business owners. So I plan on seeing you down there this session. And thank you so much for your time. Representative Michael Howard from District 50A in South Minneapolis down to Richfield, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
Thank you. It's nice to reconnect again and send my best to Matt too.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you very much for your time. Sorry to keep you so long. And now you can get back to cleaning up your old office and moving into your new one. All right. See you later, Michael.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Let's take another break. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in on the Matt McNeil Show. We'll be right back.